Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
My ankle is now the size of a watermelon. This is great.
What three wrestling matches would you watch if you were stranded on a desert island? This is what I'm asking wrestling's best. In the ring, around the ring, behind the scenes, or behind a microphone. I'm Tom Campbell. Thank you for joining me on Cultaholic Island for another episode of Desert Island Graps.
It's currently in your Tinder vicinity. She breaks the terms and conditions of Facebook. Yeah! She is about to embark on a rebranding of a major US promotion to Ring of Dishonor. She
Moth Martina, how are we doing?
Hello there. Thank you for having me.
It's an honour and or a privilege.
It's a privilege. You know it's a privilege.
Do you know what? I do, to be fair.
It's only a privilege because I'm so lazy and I hate doing, like, I've just gotten so lazy with doing, like, interviews and all that stuff during this pandemic. So when I do it, I'm like, okay, let's go. It's time for this now. Well,
I think a lot of people are burned out on talking about a sport that they've not been able to do.
That's it, exactly. It's kind of like you have to mentally prepare yourself to be like, oh, yeah, remember how great life used to be?
I am genuinely delighted that this is one of the ones that you've done. So it means a lot. So thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Excited.
Have you decided on your tattoo yet?
My tattoo?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I know what it is. It's the only problem is I wanted to get it in February because it was my 10-year wrestling anniversary of, like, when I started training. So I debuted in June 2011. So I'm kind of hoping things might be open and I might be able to get it then, just to kind of, like, cement the 10-year mark. But no spoilers. I mean, it's not that big deal. It's not a big deal. It's probably actually just really cringy and I probably won't tell anyone about it. But it's just like a little personal, 10 years, woo.
When did you decide that you were going to get a 10-year anniversary tattoo? When was that decision made?
I'd say probably around 3 or 4 years ago, because I kind of knew, like, if I'm still going in 10 years... So I've always wanted a tattoo, but I've just been lazy about, like, oh, what, like, what actually, like, means something? Because I don't have any, so I don't have that, like, I've got one, so now I'll get loads, and I've always wanted to do that. And I've just left it so long now. So I'm like, okay, I'm like, the first one means something, and then after that, we'll see what happens.
Have you ever come close to getting a tattoo at this point? Like, whether like, on a night out or anything like that?
Again, it's just pure laziness. I'm kind of like, yeah, I want a tattoo, but the effort of going in, booking, picking one, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? I think I've went to go get one about 50 times, and I just be like, oh, I'm just going to go to the pub instead.
That's fair. Normally, people go to the tattoo place after the pub. That's normally where it kind of leads.
Yeah, I could do it hand in hand, but, you know. I just kind of go straight to the end goal.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we are here to talk about your life and times, but also we're here because we're sending you onto a desert island, Martina.
I've pretty much been on a desert island of Ireland for the last year, just sort of stuck in my room on my own, so kind of feels the same.
We're going to send you to basically a different island, but with the weather. Okay,
well, that would have been much better. If somebody could have sorted that last year, I'd have really appreciated it.
And to do so, we're going to give you three wrestling matches to watch whilst you are there. And you're going to choose the matches that you get to watch. So what would you like your first match to be, Martina?
Well, if I'm stuck with only three, I'd say my first one, I'll probably go with like something. It's like vaguely from around the time that I just... probably my favorite time in wrestling. And like whenever I'm kind of burnt out on wrestling, I kind of just go back and watch like Attitude Era stuff, because it just reminds me of like, you're not looking at it with a wrestler mind. You're looking at it with a, oh, this is actually what I love about wrestling. Like I'm watching it as a fan again. I'm watching it just cause like, I just love the entertainment aspect of it. And my two favorites of all time have to be Stone Cold and Vince McMahon. So their whole feud, I remember just being a kid and like absolutely obsessed with it. Like I loved Stone Cold. And I don't know if that plays into the fact that I now, you know, wrestle with beer or anything, but he was just, as a kid, obviously he was your idol and everything like that. And I just think Vince McMahon is possibly the greatest character that has ever been on TV. I think he's hilarious. And it actually is what like rebirthed my love of wrestling when I was a bit older. Like I fell out of it for a few years, you know, where you just didn't care. And I was with my friends and we started like talking about wrestling. It's like, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember that. And then we went back to a house and started watching like a Vince McMahon documentary. And I just fell in love with wrestling instantly again. And I got obsessed from there. And that's like the start of my, you know, adult life as a wrestler and so on. So I'll pick Stone Cold and Vince McMahon from Valentine's Day Massacre.
Over 19,000 people on their feet in the pyramid for the most popular superstar in the history of the WWF. And tonight, his title shot at WrestleMania 15 hangs in the balance. And Mr. McMahon King, he said it earlier on tonight on Sunday Night Eve. He is 2-0 against Stone Cold under the most bizarre of circumstances.
Yeah. And let me just tell you about this. Look at Stone Cold. How many rednecks around the world would love to get the chance to slap around their balls?
Rattlesnakes don't make good corporate pets.
Right.
Cage is open. Referee Mike Chioda leading the boss in, and we're about set for action. The Rattlesnake, Mr. McMahon, title shot at WrestleMania on the line.
And look at Mr. McMahon. You know what he's doing? I know his strategy. He is psyching Stone Cold out.
Uh-oh. Stone Cold trying to be patient here. McMahon making him wait. And if the boss is so confident, so arrogant about this match, as he's been in recent weeks, why doesn't he just get in the cage, King, and start this thing?
Are you deaf? Did you not hear what I just said? His strategy, you idiot.
Mr. McMahon climbing up on the cage. Austin's after him. Austin's after him.
There you go.
McMahon tries to battle back.
Kick him, Mr. McMahon. Kick him off.
McMahon again with kicks to the midsection. Austin with an elbow. McMahon is holding on by one hand. No! No! Mr. McMahon! Kill! He may be dead! Mr. McMahon fell 20 feet! McMahon fell 20 feet off the steel cage through the Spanish announce table!
Hey, look at Austin, he's smiling! Is he alive?
Stone Cold bounced McMahon's head off the top of the steel cage!
Is he alive?
And the boss fell 20 feet to the floor!
This is the steel cage match. If Steve Austin was to win, he'd go on to WrestleMania. and the corporate ministry being banned from ringside and all that, and then Vince McMahon wins, then he goes on to WrestleMania. That's the story. Now, this was a great example of Vince McMahon being one of those people that leads by example, because there's nothing that he would do or that he would ask someone to do that he wouldn't be willing to do himself. And he bumps a lot in this match, and he bleeds in this match, doesn't he?
I think it's more than anything with Vince, like, it's just his absolute dedication to his character. Like, he goes one step beyond, like 10 steps beyond. He's at, like, the passion and the charisma he has, I just think is unparalleled. I think it's amazing. Like, he just gets me interested. He's hilarious. He knows when to be funny. He knows when to be evil. You know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. I think he is the godfather of character wrestling.
Wrestling in the Attitude Era was all about characters as well. Oh,
I should have been born then. I swear to God, like, I'd have been. I feel like I am like the leftover remnants of these days of the Attitude Era, because I'm just determined to keep it alive in whatever scene we're in now. You know what I mean? And I mean, it might be outdated. It might not. I feel like everybody loves a lot. Like, that was when wrestling was at its most popular. So I feel like everybody, especially around like our age and in and around, like, you know, that's what people kind of loved about wrestling. That's what sparked people's love of wrestling for a lot of people and stuff. So it was its best time. So I like to think that, like, well, maybe what I'm doing is like a little bit of a hint of that. You know what I mean?
I get it. With that match, the finish I always remember, which is the debut of the Big Show. It's Paul White's first appearance, bursting through the ring. But you, at this point, you dipped out of wrestling, as you say. So you wouldn't have been sort of entrenched in that world as much. But you would have.
No.
But was there a moment, do you think, when you watched that match? I know you watched it as part of a documentary, but was there something in that match that made you go, I need to get back into this?
Well, I remember, like, vaguely from, like, when I was younger and, like, loving it. I just don't have any, like, strong, strong memories. Because, like, we used to watch it on, like, Sky One on Saturday mornings, and we just get, like, reels and stuff like that of what was going on. So we don't really get half of the stuff. So then when I got back into wrestling later, and I got, like, obviously there was so much there, I got, like, to really immerse myself in it all. So that's when I really kind of could pay attention to the whole, like, I knew I loved it, but I could pay attention to the whole, like, oh my God, the Austin McMahon feud was amazing. And, like, everything, like, Triple H and Stephanie, all around that. Like, I'm very bad with dates and stuff like that, but it's just all jumbled in my memory. And I just think, I don't know what it was. It just kind of, it was everything about Stone Cold against McMahon, everything that it stood for, that I was just like, yeah, this is prime wrestling.
You go from being a lapsed fan to back in as a result of that Vince McMahon documentary. But what was the moment where you went, I don't now want to be a fan, this is something I need to do? I know you said in other interviews that there was a TNA wrestling show that you went to that sparked that. Is that the case?
Well, I remember, like, I was mad about wrestling, and I was going to, like, WWE house shows when they came over and stuff like that, and I didn't really know anything about, like, an Irish wrestling scene. And then I was in line to meet Chris Jericho to get him to sign my book. And there was just somebody standing ahead of me in the queue, and I got talking to him, and he was like, yeah, my brother's a wrestler. He's at a show right now. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, what's that about? And he's like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. There's, like, Irish shows. And he started telling me about it. And I was like, what? So I just, like, looked up on Facebook, like, what's this about, blah, blah, blah. And then I saw there was, like, an Irish wrestling school, and it wasn't too far from me either. And I was just like, oh, wow. But I was like, no way, I couldn't do it. No way, like, I'll be a referee or something. But then I was like, I wouldn't actually do it. But then I decided to go to one of their shows just to see it. And when I went, I was like, getting the fire in you. And I was like, I started meeting people that were involved in wrestling. I was like, oh, I'd love to do it. And then they were like, okay, you're doing it. And I was like, No. And they'd be like, no, come on. So, like, my first class, like, the trainer at the time set up, like, a little private ring time with me and someone else just to, like, bump and see how I find it. And then after I went to the TNA show, and I met more people, and I was just like, oh my God, I have to do this. Like, this is amazing. You know what I mean? I was like, screw it. I'm just going to go down to training. Obviously, I kind of looked at it like, oh, maybe this would be a good way to, like, get fit and lose weight or whatever. But I guess, like, you know, once you start, the fire kind of gets ignited, and here we are, like, 10 years later.
You said that you wanted to go to wrestling training initially because you thought, oh, it's a good way to get in shape and it's something to be around in wrestlers, around something I love. Do you think in the back of your mind there was part of you that went, yeah, but I want to be a wrestler? Even in the back of your mind, do you think that thought was maybe there?
I remember like when I was mad into it back then, but not doing it, I couldn't comprehend how people could be wrestlers. I was like, that's amazing. There's no way. Like I was a fair bit heavier as well then. And I was like, I'd never crossed my mind to do it, honestly. But I always had the want. I would always like, oh, I'd love to do that. But I never could. You know what I mean? It didn't cross my mind that I could, especially because I didn't know if there was any Irish sort of scene. And then obviously when I went down to the training school and I saw like just people exactly like me down there, and I was just kind of like, oh, well, if they're all giving it a go, it's a bit of fun, you know? Get to be, as you said, like involve yourself in the world of wrestling. But it seemed so minute then, you know what I mean? Like it was just a small little, I even found it surreal that there was even this small group of people in Ireland that loved wrestling that much to actually do a school and stuff like that. Cause it just, the concept seemed so foreign. And it was more like, oh, I want to be around like people that like what I like. And like I made loads of friends through it and stuff like that. And then, you know, started seeing like the little indie shows that they had. And I started ring announcing after a little while, so I was like involved in it. And then like I think within 6 months I'd made my debut, so it wasn't too bad, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Tell me something that you learned on your first day of wrestling training that surprised you.
That bumps really hurt. Mm-hmm. I remember very well like walking into the school and seeing the wrestling ring and being so like, oh my God, it's a wrestling ring. Oh, this is amazing. And like, I remember just even as a kid, like you used to like pretend to step through the ropes and all that. So then the first time I got to step through the ropes, I was like, this is unreal. I feel like I'm a diva.
Yeah.
It's kind of embarrassing thinking about it now, but...
No, it's because you watch it on TV and you're putting yourself in that world again, I think.
Yeah, it's even just like a little bit of like imagination play, like, oh, I'm stepping in the ring. I'm like Maurice or something.
Who do you remember being particularly wonderful and supportive during your early stages in wrestling training? Some of the people that you worked with, some people that trained you.
Oh, everyone. I'm still friends with all of them. Like, the guy that owned Main Stage, Lenny Hannah, and John Jennings, Johnny Notaro, Lee, and Terrence, Thunder and Lightning, like they're all, not all of them are involved in wrestling still, but like they were there kind of at the very, very beginning, and they were the ones that were kind of like, oh, come on, you should do it. And like, I'm still friends with them all. I watched WrestleMania with a few of them and all. So they're obviously like, I was like the only girl when I started there. There was only about a group of like six of us. And I think out of that six of us, like only two or three of us still wrestle. So I think like they're all fairly proud of the fact that we came from such a small little group and you've gone on to actually do stuff in wrestling. I suppose we all just thought it was like it would never happen because we're just from this like tiny little wrestling school in like Crumlin. And then like to think that like if you'd said to me then like, oh, you're going to go on and go to Japan and like Australia and like get signed and do a tryout and all that kind of stuff, I'd have laughed at you because I was like, no, that's not possible. It's just such a different time then, you know. And then obviously my trainer is still my trainer to this day, like Joe Cabray runs OTT, and if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have done Martina and everything like that. So it's quite great the fact that like from the very start of my journey, I've had the same people with me all through it and they've all been helping me all the way. Like Joe, I turned to when I was doing my tryout, when I was getting signed with Ring of Honor, I just asked him everything for, he prepared me for absolutely everything that I had coming up, you know?
With obviously the rise of yourself through into Ring of Honor, with Becky Lynch headlining WrestleMania, becoming a global phenomenon, have you seen an increase in female people wanting to train in Ireland? Have you seen an increase?
Oh yeah,
in that?
Definitely, and it's been a huge success story as well because I was the only girl at my school for a long time, and eventually like Katie Harvey started training down at Fight Factory, so we wrestled together a lot, so we had like a huge chunk of our career together because we did like the little shows all over and stuff like that, and then we went on to start having like feuds at OTT in such a bigger scale. So it was really cool to kind of have that together. It's like, oh, we started here when it was really, really small and now it's getting really big and we're doing it together. And then like since that there's been like Debbie Keitel, Valkyrie, you know, so on. So it's there's been it went from kind of pretty much just having two girls to having now there's like enough for a roster, you know, a small roster still, but you know, we're hoping after COVID we might get even more in, you know, the boom happens again, you know.
is that a hope for running like an all-female show in Ireland?
Well, we had all female shows. We'd obviously book a lot of British and European talent in for them. But for the last like 3 years, OTT had started running Defiant shows, which would happen like after a big like Scrappermania or after a big stadium show. So I only got to do the first one because every other time I've been in Japan for them, but they've been huge successes. They've been great. Like, it just goes to show that like the little group of girls in Ireland can go on and mix it up with some of the best girls in Europe, you know?
So with OTT, there's so much love for them within the industry. Like, you know, we hear a lot about the stars that come to and from there. Devastated that that big show didn't happen last year.
Oh, it's devastating.
Because that was going to be massive.
It's still such a hard knock. Like, we haven't even been able to train since the week before that all went down. And I was actually gone to Vegas, so I wasn't going to be at that show. But I remember us all in training the last day before it all went down, kind of being like, are we going to have to cancel? And then, like, we haven't barely seen each other since, you know what I mean? It's mad.
It's a weird old time. Take it back to yourself and Joe. And you talk about how it was Joe that helped you bring out that Session Moth Martina character. I want to talk a bit about how you build that character. Because it is such a unique force of nature in wrestling. How do you start building something like a Session Moth Martina?
Well, I had been doing Kazuji for about 4 to 5 years, which was just your basic run-of-the-mill babyface wrestler. You know, I kind of thought like it was a very different time then. So I was like, oh, I'm a female wrestler. I don't need a character. I don't need anything else. You know, there's so few of us that there's always a spot in a show. I'm just going to be a basic forward babyface. So I got good at like crowd work and, you know, just doing kind of kid themed shows and getting like building your confidence through that. So that was great. And I got to go to like, I went to Germany and Belgium a few times, and that was the extent of my international travel, which was amazing. Like, I went to Switzerland as well, which was amazing, you know, for especially kind of just being a female wrestler, you know what I mean? There was kind of nothing to me. And then as OTT began, I remember the first show, I was still Kazuji, and it was just such a switch. It was like the Attitude Era had come back. It was a different vibe. It was older people. Everybody was wild. They were going crazy. They loved the characters on the first show. They absolutely loved them. Like, our crowd then was small compared to what it grew to, but they were such a fiery, hot crowd. And they kind of were like, we knew they were going to be regulars. So then, like, when I kind of seen that, I was like, okay, Kazuji is not really going to cut it. Like, you're seeing lads like lads from the flats and the wards, and they have such great characters and the crowd love them. So then I was talking to Joe and he was like, oh, I'm thinking about putting a girl with lads from the flats if you want to do that. And I was like, yeah, that's brilliant. I could call myself a session mot, because that's a really big term in Ireland at the time, especially, is what you would just call girls that would hang out with like lads from the flats, and they just go to sessions, they drink and they just want to party, and you know, they're obsessed with cans and spice bags and so on. So the morning of that show, I just went down to like Penny's or Primark, and they had leopard print pajamas there. So I was like, oh, I'm gonna get them, and I got hoop earrings, come out with a can. And that was kind of like my basis of the thing. And I had a chat with the lads from the flats. I was like, what should I call myself? And they were like, oh, we were like, oh, Martina. Like, there's always a Martina in the flats. So I was like, yeah, we'll go with that. Like, so yeah, we just did like a little promo video to introduce me. And it was just so fun. And it was so different. And I felt like a lot more comfortable instantly. It was kind of like, I'm not worried about what I'm wearing or how I look, or, you know what I mean? Or like how even crisp I am. It was all about like, oh, I'm going to like explore this character. I'm going to have a bit of a laugh. I'm going to do a bit of comedy. So I started like getting thrown in matches with them, mainly against the gymnasties in our early years, and that really kind of like taught me a lot about comedy wrestling and off the crowd and timing and stuff like that. And it just, to me, it was like a rebirth. I was like, this is so much fun. This is what I want to do. Like, I don't want to go back to just kind of, hey, wrestling. I want to do this. I want to do like fun comedy matches. I felt like it just suited me better, and like I got to kind of show my personality better Because like I'd always be joking and laughing and taking the piss out of myself backstage, and then I'd go out to a show and be like trying to be super serious, and it's just not me. So then getting to bring that like jokey side into the ring was just like, oh, this fits so well, this is so much better, you know what I mean? So yeah, it just kind of grew from there. And I think the crowd, because a lot of the crowd like were kind of casual wrestling fans, so they weren't like there for the flips or there for the hard hitting stuff, they were kind of there for the entertainment. So they ended up latching on to the character a lot, and they ended up loving it. Because like in Ireland, they'd be like, oh, Session Moth, that's hilarious, I know a girl like that. So a lot of like lads that would bring their girlfriends to the show that don't like wrestling would be like, oh, she's hilarious, I'm a Session Moth too. So I really kind of started to grow in popularity from that. And yeah, it just kind of went from there. It got popular in Ireland, and then before you knew it, like the UK had started to notice. I started taking it then around 2017. I started taking it over the UK, which was great. And it just hasn't ended until Corona. Like I constantly kind of stayed where I was, you know.
There is a comfort, isn't there, in being a character. You've mentioned it there, how you're not so concerned about sort of how you look, how you present yourself, whether everything's crisp and perfect or not, because that's Martina.
Yeah,
Karen.
it was almost Martina. Like, oh, if I look a mess, that's Martina, it's okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's actually funnier the worse I look, like the more hungover I look. And just kind of like, yeah, you wouldn't like be so hard on yourself if you like watch it back and be like, oh, I look ridiculous. But it's like, actually, no, that's a good thing. I look ridiculous and it's funny. You know what I mean? So it ended up like kind of giving me a lot more confidence in myself by not having to worry so much about how I looked and what people thought of me and stuff like that, you know what I mean? It was definitely the most freeing experience I've ever had, and it changed my life, because I was like, this is great. It helped me like almost develop my own personality. I got more confident just in every aspect of my life, you know what I mean?
So Karen has been lifted by Martina.
Yeah, pretty much. Like Martina is Karen, they're pretty much the same. Like I love to drink, I love to dance, I love to make a fool of myself, it's great. So it's pretty much Karen the Session Moth.
Of all the noughties bangers you could have chose, why Sandstorm?
Well, because it's a noughties banger, isn't it?
It is like, a noughties banger.
It's what you would hear at, like, if you're at a session and everybody was just up for a rave. Like, it's a proper, like, oh, let's go for a rave. You want to be drunk. You want to be in bits. Like, in Ireland, I use Maniac 2000 as well, because it's such a typical Irish banger. Like any wedding you go to, you hear Maniac, everybody's up dancing. So it's just more the way to get the crowd dancing, and it's easy for me to dance too. I just want to have a rave. When we used to come out with lads in the flats, we came out to Tiesto, and I can't remember the name of the song, Adagio of Strings or something, but I remember like we had this little thing, everybody was on the turnbuckles, we'd be there and we'd have these like drops, and everybody in the crowd would be up waving their hands, and as soon as a beat dropped, everybody started dancing, and it was honestly just people started throwing glow sticks in. It was absolute magic.
Was it Sandstorm that led to an injury pre-death match for you?
Yes, it did. That was great. It was 2018, and it was actually the night before our first Defiant show, but I had my very first death match, and it was me, LJ Cleary, Joey Janela, and TK Cooper. And the following week, like within, I'd say about 5 days, I was going to go to America for the first time. And then when I got back from America, I was going to Japan for the first time. But I was like, yeah, I'm going to be gone a little while. I want to go out on a high. So let's have a big death match. And I remember begging Joe, can I do this? Can I do that? Can I do that? He was like, whatever, just do what you want. So I kind of had all the ideas, because obviously the imports, you know, they didn't know what they were coming into. And I was like, hi guys, I've got all this stuff. this is what we're doing. So I kind of like planned it, where I was taking like all the kind of gnarly stuff. And I was ready for it. And I remember before we went out to the curtain, I was like, oh shoot, like what am I doing? I regret, I'll make all of this. I don't want to do it. But anyway, the music hit and I went out and I was just dancing. I was giving it socks. And I rolled over my ankle. And then I was like, oh, in my head, I was just like, that's not a very good start to a death match, is it? Forgot about it. Like, adrenaline got me through. I ended up taking like staples to the head and chairs to the head and thumbtacks and high bumps and all this stuff and through tables and everything. Didn't even notice it. Came back after and I was like, oh, my ankle is now the size of a watermelon. This is great. Luckily, it went down before I had to go to America, but I was freaking out. I was like, how am I going to... I have to make my Japanese debut and my American debut with a swollen ankle. This is great.
We want to talk about both of those in a little bit, but we've got your second match to get to for your DVD.
No.
Oh, yes. Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon was your first one, the Steel Cage match from St. Valentine's Day Massacre 1999. What would you like for your second one, Martina?
I would have to say I'll say another match that like kind of changed the game for everyone in wrestling, I feel like. Sasha and Bayley at TakeOver.
I'm going to teach every single one of these little girls that fairy tales don't have a happy ending.
I'm going to finally prove to the world, prove to my mom who keeps coming to these championship matches and watching me lose, and I'm going to prove to Sasha Banks.
Here comes Bayley. She's finally had enough.
That she was wrong about me, and I will defeat her.
Oh, what a planted! Planted!
Oh, no.
The fairy tale ends right here.
Or does it? Bayley desperately crawling. Desperately reaching out for the bottom rope.
It's a couple inches away. Bayley can just reach.
So close. Oh, my goodness.
On that
the injured right hand. The boss will stop it on the hand. Bayley reaching out still. Can't she get there? She tucked it. She tucked the rope. Reversal. Reversal.
How did she do that?
She reversed Sasha's own move. The big statement, but this time it is Bayley with the submission maneuver applied.
Bayley's hanging on for dear life. Sasha might be on the verge of tapping right here.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Sasha Banks getting the bottom rope with her foot. Able to break the hold, but my God.
I think Sasha Banks knew she was just seconds away from relinquishing her NXT Women's Championship.
I still don't know how Bayley reversed the bank statement.
I remember when that happened, that just was a match I'd watch over and over because it was, oh, wow, look at this. Like, these girls are doing matches that we've never seen girls do before. Not on TV, anyway. So, yeah, that was definitely it started a whole revolution. It completely changed the game for women wrestling.
Can you remember where you were when you watched it?
Yeah, I was in work. I remember I had a job as a receptionist for a courier company, and the office was always kind of quiet. So I remember like the next day I was sitting there watching it in work, like hoping the phone wouldn't ring. So I'd have to pause it and like go off and do some work. But I remember just kind of sitting there in work being like, what am I doing in this office? This is what I want to be doing. Like, get me out now.
Was that the match the moment where you went, that's where I need to be out of here now?
Was like, definitely, I was just kind of like, this is, they've just set the bar to a whole new level. And yeah, that, so we like, I was like, everybody has to raise their game now. And they did. Like, I feel like because of that match, girls started realizing like, oh, we don't have to just do the same old typical stuff, what people expect from us. We can actually wrestle how we want to wrestle. So they started doing it, and then the change in wrestling from then to now is just insane.
There'll always be more work to do, but like you say, it's the fact that now it's more, everybody seems to be getting onto an even keel. There's always work to do, but like, mm-hmm. We've just come off a WrestleMania weekend where night one was headlined by Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair, and it was done not because of any platitude. It was done because of the fact, well, that's the match that has the most significance on this night. And they, if they have other designs on Drew and Bobby at the start, that makes sense to put it at the end. Do you see a point where we have, surely we're moving towards more matches, more cases where the women organically headlined wrestling shows?
Oh, yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like we're already there. It's not even questioned anymore. You know what I mean? It's not even like, it shouldn't even be a surprise anymore. You know, the girls have kind of, it's happening now. And it's like, it's not even a case of like, oh my God, women are headlining. It's like, no, they deserve it. They're the best match that's going to be the best match in the card. And it's not even a surprise to people. You know, they like, yeah, I feel like it's just genuinely going to be the norm now. I feel like a lot of it now, it's like, I feel like gender equality in wrestling has never been its highest. Do you know what I mean? Like, a woman could be in the main event, men could be in the main event, both could be in the main event on an indie, on a main show. You know what I mean? It's a given now. I actually genuinely feel there's no more talk of like, oh, well, the women aren't as good as the men. It's like, no. Sometimes the women are better than the men. Do you know what I mean? You're not judging wrestling based on if it's a woman or if it's a man, you're basing it solely on the fact of their wrestling and the fact that they are a wrestler, you know?
A massive part of your work. Oh, are you okay? Oh, there you are. Sorry.
Yeah, because war.
I thought you'd just run off.
And I'm done now. See ya.
Okay, bye. Finished questions. Thanks. A massive part of your journey has been your adventures in Japan as part of Stardom. That came as a surprise to you, didn't it? Getting the call to go to Stardom.
I mean, why on earth would I ever think, like, obviously it's a dream and I've talked to people about, like, oh my God, I'd love to go to Japan. But in the back of my head, I was like, oh, it never happened though, because Japan is such a solid wrestling country. Like, it's so hard hitting. I always kind of had a very narrow view of how I thought, like, women's wrestling was hardcore, proper wrestling. And I never kind of thought, like, oh, they'd never go for a character. You know what I mean? They want, like, solid wrestlers. I mean, I'm okay, but I'm not, you know, the level of these Japanese girls. So it never even fazed me. I was like, I'd love to go, but it probably won't happen. And then obviously, like, I had built up quite a big name in Ireland and the UK at the time. And, like, I'd started to, like, my reach had started to go to the States. Like, people were tweeting about me and, like, companies, like, wanting to kind of, like, oh, if you're ever over here, we'll book you kind of thing. I was like, oh, well, I'm getting, like, out there. My name's getting out there, which is great. But I still was like, nah, Japan, different world, won't happen. And I remember I was at an OTT show and I was out drinking with everyone after. And I remember I kind of, like, looked at my phone in the bar and I saw, like, oh, Stardom followed me. Went off, got drunk, didn't think about it again. Next day we're in the car going up north for another show. I was like, oh, check my phone. Like, and I saw my messages. I just started screaming in the car, Japan, 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 Japan. Stardom had messaged me like, hey, like, we're wondering if you'd like to come over in March next year, blah, blah, blah. And I couldn't believe it. I remember I was just, it was like leaving my body. It was a different experience. I just couldn't, even still then, I was like, I don't think this is going to happen. This can't be real. This can't be real. And then just as time went towards it, I just kind of had to keep pinching myself. Like, I'm going to Japan. I'm going to Japan. Like, I'll never forget getting on the plane to go there in the first place and landing and everything. It was actually around this time, 3 years ago now, that I was first there. So yeah, it was amazing. I actually think I made my debut 3 years ago today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
In Stardom. Yeah, it came up in my Facebook memories there. I was like, oh, wow, that's amazing.
With that, what's some of the favourite moments or sort of favourite parts of Japanese culture for you while you were out there? Is there stuff that you loved?
Drinking. The drinking culture is amazing. just the going out for food and having drinks with people was always great. Just everything there, how respectful they are, how welcoming they were. Like, they always have a laugh with you, and just their professionalism as well. You know, everything is, it's a sport there. It's serious there. It's very respected there. Just how hard everyone works as well. Like, you know, we go to training religiously. You know what I mean? You're always in the dojo. There's no excuses. You don't not go. You know what I mean? So you're training hard. You prepare for your matches. Everyone's putting their best effort in. Like, it's a wrestler's dream to go to Japan and actually live there and absorb the culture and see how you get on. Like, first time I went, it was a bit of a shock. You know what I mean? It's such a different world. You're not used to it. You have your own way about things. You don't speak the language, so you're kind of scared. Like, am I doing this right? Am I not doing this right? And you've only got your, like, gaijin friends to kind of guide you. And then, like, the second time, I remember by the time I left my first tour, my last match, I tagged with Natsu. And I remember kind of, like, nothing really felt like it was fitting. I didn't really know what was going on for the whole first tour. And then the last match I had there, I tagged with Natsu. And I remember it just in my head, it was like, click. Everything just fell into place. I was like, yes, this is magic. This is it. And, like, the promoter loved it. Everyone in the crowd loved it. I think everyone was like, yep, yeah, that's it there. Natsu and Sessionmont Martina. So then I went back for Tag League the next following 2 years, and we just gel so perfectly. So she's without a doubt my favorite part of Japan.
Can you attribute what it was that made that click?
Just, I guess, like, Natsu has... she has so much charisma, and she has such a way with the crowd. Like, But I don't know what she's saying to them in Japanese, but it's hilarious. And she's a bit of a wild spirit. So when you put my wild spirit next to her wild spirit, it just complemented each other. So like she played off me really well and my character, and she started to like adopt bits of my character. So then when we went for back for Tagli, she started wearing leopard print and she come out with a can, and she was all about that party lifestyle. And we started like dancing and stuff. She's just fantastic. Like she adapted so well. Like she made it so comfortable for me to try and like get my character across through her. You know what I mean? It was great. It was almost like having a Japanese translator there for my character, and it just worked so well.
It was like having a wingman.
Yeah, it was. It was great. Like we ended up actually, we were really good friends. Like she's probably my best friend out of the Japanese girls. Like we'd go out drinking together, and she's just an absolute sweetheart. Now, hopefully, like when travel opens up again, she can come to Ireland and UK and like get to experience, because she was meant to come like last year and I couldn't wait. I was like, oh, we're gonna have a bit of a tour, you know, bring the Queens of Kampai around. So hopefully that happens, because I think like this side of the world, if they don't know her, they'll absolutely love her. They'll just see what I see in her and be like, she is a star.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wrestling out of Dublin, Ireland, Session Martina!
And Brian, I mean, this, I didn't know this type of, you like rock and roll, we've talked about it. I mean, but you're dancing with this music a little bit, you're grooving.
Hey, let's get to the important stuff. She may have stolen my beer.
She did.
The beer, she has stolen, not a misunderstanding, but she's very talented in the ring.
She certainly is. Don't let this fool you.
What a dancer.
I mean, she's competed with her friends at Stardom, and she's competed all over the UK. She has a great win-loss record in the UK, in Stardom, and we're so happy she's exclusive here in the United States to Ring of Honor. And Brian, you are not only blushing,
I'm sweating.
I don't know if we can get a shot of this after
sweating.
We see Martina here.
I've never seen this guy like kidding me right
off his
now.
Face.
He's blushing, he's red. You're the same color as your face.
Guys, stop encouraging this.
I'm not encouraging. I'm a visualist. I have to be able to audibly explain what's going on here, and they can visually see it.
Well, we're going to take a look at the tail of the tables. We take a look at Martina Session Moth falling down. Does she know she's in this match there?
It's one of those things where it felt like all the buses came along at the same time, because you had calls from Ring of Honor, you had calls from WWE, and we're now seeing you in Ring of Honor. Not as much as we'd hoped by now, but in time, it's going to be a thing. Before we get to Ring of Honor, I want to talk about your WWE tryout. So, like, they... With NXT UK being a thing now, they're certainly grabbing a lot more people in. But talk to us how that whole process worked for you.
I was in Australia. I remember, 2019 was probably my most successful year I've ever had, like, which I thought was shocking because I thought 2017 couldn't be beat. And then 2018, I went to America for the first time in Japan. And then 2019, I don't know why, it just kind of exploded all over again. Like, I had an amazing Mania week. I feel like that got a lot of eyes on me that year. Like, the first year I went, it was a great introduction, but people kind of were like, oh, now we know who she is. So by the following year, I went from having like 3 bookings the first year to having 9 bookings the next year. You know, people were excited to see me. It was their first chance to see me again in America. I ended up getting to go to Shimmer and Rise within that, and got like a booking in Ohio. It's like a lot of American companies at that point had heard of me and were like, oh, well, if she's over, we'll get her for this and join it up with this. So it ended up being like a fantastic tour. And I feel like I just got my name really, really out there. So I think like that's what kind of maybe got like WWE eyes on me and Ring of Honor eyes on me and stuff. And then a couple of weeks later, I was going to Australia as well, which was mind-blowing because I don't think anyone from Ireland has wrestled in Australia. So, and then when I was in Australia, I met some like people that worked for New Japan, and obviously talking about Stardom and stuff like that. And they kind of got me in touch with Ring of Honor. But I remember thinking like, this is just, you know, oh, this is just a cool little introduction email, but I didn't really think anything would come from it. Then I was leaving Australia, I got an email about the all-women's tryout, and I was like, oh, wow. And then I knew like a few of the girls that had had it, and I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to... It was kind of like, I don't know. I again, it was another case kind of like with Japan. I never pictured myself in WWE. I always had it down to like, I am what I am. I am this character that is not PG. It is beer drinking, filthy, flirty, you know, kind of everything attitude era that they just don't do anymore. It's inspired by WWE, WWF, but they're just, they're, that's not what they do anymore. And I had completely understood that and accepted it. I mean, obviously a little bit of you in your heart, you're always like, oh, I wish one day I could end up in WWE, but I have decided to do this character now. It's working for me. So I kind of resigned myself to the fact that I would probably never go to WWE. So then when I got the email, I was, what? This is surreal. Oh my God, this is shocking. But I was like, okay, I mean, they may still not want me. They may just want to have a look and see what they think, you know? But I resigned myself to kind of being like, okay, don't, no hopes up or anything like that, but I'm going to go and train hard and try have the best showing of myself. Yeah, so, and then I went, and it was an amazing experience. Yeah, like I ended up getting asked to stay for a training week and kind of see how they do things down in with the roster and stuff like that. And obviously a lot of my friends worked there, so I was very comfortable there. Like I had a really, really good time, but it was just kind of a case of like, I don't know if I necessarily belong here, you know?
It's not for everybody, that sort of
everybody. Yeah, but again, it was just kind of the same thing as Japan, where it's like, I don't know if this is what they want from me, or if it is what they would want. And like, can I do it their way? You know what I mean? Will it work? Will it not? And again, of course, the dream, like, I can't honestly say that, like, I don't sometimes think like, oh, if I went there, what would have happened? You know, and I, part of me still would really love to, you know, it's just kind of the case. I feel like at the time I was starting to really, really kind of kick off again in the UK and Europe and stuff like that. And I felt like I was really kind of right where I wanted to be with Sesshima as a character. I was starting to have better matches, like better quality matches, but still staying true to my character. You know what I mean? Still having fun with the comedy. I was starting to like have really a lot of fun doing debt matches or just random matches, intergender matches. I could wrestle anywhere I wanted. I could go to the States, I could go to Australia, I could go to Japan. I was at a point at that time where I was just really enjoying, you know, just a bit of freedom and seeing. I wasn't ready to like kind of change Martina if needed, because I knew I have to change Martina if I want to go here. And I just didn't feel it was the right time to do that yet. I felt there was still a bit of life left in the beer drinking, filthy, flirty girl. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I would have said that had been. I think that was the front of a lot of people's minds when there was rumblings of you getting a tryout in WWE.
Yeah.
Because it'd be like, I don't know whether we want sort of Session Moth Martina light. Whether that's for good or for bad, that kind of would have been where we'd have gone. We kind of know.
Yeah, and I wouldn't ever rule it out because like,
oh no, not at all.
You know, there's progression in wrestling all the time. Like people need to change it up. People need to expand and grow and everything like that. I just felt like in 2019 at that time, I wasn't done yet, and I'm still not done. You know, I've had a year break, like nothing's changed. And if anything, I feel like post-pandemic, there is going to be an even bigger want for a little bit of fun. You know, like everything's been so serious the last year. It's been quite sad. Everyone's just sitting watching it at home and stuff like that. I feel like that party atmosphere post-pandemic is going to be sorely needed. You know, just that little blowing off steam, have a laugh, have a bit of fun, get up for a dance during an entrance, you know, just laughing. Because I mean, I have been miserable this last year, so I can't wait to get out there and just have comedy matches and laugh and joke and dance and do everything that we've missed so much. So that's why I still to this day feel like I made the right decision, because I'm so, if anything, I'm more eager to be more Martina when I get back.
Because Ring of Honor are embracing every inch of Sesha Moth Martina, and that was was a big deciding factor, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just kind of like there was like obviously two amazing offers, and I mean, mind blown. So to this day, I still can't believe, like, what the hell? Like, I'm sitting in this room in Ireland, like, just being like, how the hell did you get offers from these two of the biggest companies in the world? Like, it's just shocking. I still have to pinch myself. But both of them had amazing kind of paths ahead of me. And it was just about, again, it was purely just about, like, I just want to kind of figure out more with the wild side of Martina before kind of taming it down. So then with Ring of Honor, the kind of choices was like, okay, well, you can stay in Ireland and you can still do indies all everywhere else, you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, that's great, you know, and you can like pretty much just be yourself. And they had like Beer City Bruisers there and stuff like that. So they were like encouraging the whole beer and like wild, kind of funny. They wanted a comedy character, you know what I mean? That's what they kind of said. They knew what they were getting with me and they wanted it, you know? So it was kind of like I had complete control over who I wanted to be and stuff like that. And I could still do everything I wanted on the outside. So, and obviously getting to like travel America and like meet all these new people and get to go to all these states. And like, obviously none of that happened yet, but like I met amazing people from the few times I was there. They're so, so good. Like they've been so supportive through this whole pandemic, and like they're so eager to get us back. Like there's a women's tournament coming up, and we just have our fingers and toes crossed that everything can kind of go ahead as planned. So yeah, I still am very, very, like they've been amazing. I couldn't be happier with my decision.
And you said there before we started that you were up late doing some stuff with Ring of Honor. They've really kept you. It's something special to the fact that you've wrestled so little with them so far, out of your control. But you've been voted female wrestler of the year.
Wrestler of the year. I know, that's amazing. Like, that just kind of says to me, like, that makes me feel so appreciated. You know what I mean? It makes me just feel like, oh, like I win women's wrestler of the year and I've only had like two matches, but like that just means my online presence for them has been noted and appreciated. You know what I mean? Like we've just done stuff like Zoom calls with fans. We do like a Dungeons and Dragons YouTube thing. We're just trying to put out content for people, especially like I know America's a bit better in the pandemic now, like more things are open, but here in Ireland we're pretty much still in lockdown and there's like no sign of it like changing for a while. So like we're just trying to create stuff for people just to stay involved and stay relevant. So getting to see people on the Zoom call last night was amazing, and yeah, it's been great, like just kind of little things just to keep ourselves involved, you know what I mean? But I like to think that like it's just, it's all just a big build for when I finally get to go back there.
Absolutely. You've kept a lot of people sane with putting stuff out online. What sort of things have kept you sane during lockdown?
I don't know if I've really stayed sane during it.
Sure.
I'm not going to lie and say it's been easy. It definitely hasn't. I kind of disassociated from wrestling quite a bit the last few months. I'm kind of coming out of it now because I feel like I'm starting to get good news again, like getting news of that women's tournament, getting news of like we have a new wrestling school opening up whenever we're allowed. So it's there for me. You know, kind of like little bits of hope about like restrictions lifting and seeing shows over in England, like whether I get to go or not, like that I still don't have full faith, but hoping that I get to do a few shows in England in the coming months. Just the idea that we might actually be on the final stretch now, I've kind of been able to open up again and watch wrestling again. But I really did have to, I kind of stopped tweeting as much and just stayed off my phone because it was just getting, it was very hard sitting and even watching everyone on NXT UK wrestling and doing tapings. And I've sat at my home for a year, kind of just waiting and waiting even for a wrestling school so I could train. So I really had to take a step back from wrestling. But in a way, I kind of feel like that was a bit of a blessing at the same time. Because I feel like if I'd kind of been too focused on wrestling this entire time, I would have got burnt out and resentful, and it could have put me off completely. So I feel like I had a bit of a break. I got to feel like I started playing games a lot more, like became a big gamer in the last couple of months, which has been great. Just kind of getting out there and kind of living a bit of a real life again. Like I'm doing a bit of training for another side thing I can't mention yet, but I started doing that in the last couple of weeks. So it's another little venture. It's kind of like wrestling. So it's opened up other little roads and passes to my life. So I'm grateful for them things, but the last little while, I'm very eager to get back to wrestling.
Can you mention what games you've been playing?
Oh my God. The Uncharted series. I'm playing Last of Us 2 at the moment because I took a break for a while, but I played Last of Us 1, played God of War, Resident Evil 3, Resident Evil 7. Oh, there's a live stream for Resident Evil 8 today as well.
Oh, nice.
I'm a nerd now. Yeah, I played loads, but I'm going to play Red Dead Redemption because I kind of am like, oh no, everyone says that like it's like 100 hours of gameplay. It's like, if we're getting near the end of this pandemic, I won't have time to play it.
It's a deep game, you go very deep on it.
Yeah, so I'm going to finish Last of Us 2 and then jump right into Red Dead Redemption and try ride out the rest of this. And like, hopefully by the time I finish it, I'll be wrestling again.
Oh, so third match for your DVD.
I'm going to pick a match I actually only watched last night because, as I said, I'd been very disassociated from wrestling for a long time. And obviously I watched Mania. Mania I thought was amazing. But this match kind of shook me. It kind of reawoke that kind of feeling of, God, I can't wait to get back training. God, I actually want to watch wrestling again. Like, this is going to be great. I really, really, really can't wait to get to Ring of Honor. So, like, last night they aired Ring of Honor's 500th episode. And the main event of it was Jay and Mark Briscoe wrestling each other. Now, usually I wouldn't really pick a match during the pandemic time with no crowd, etc. But I'm just going to pick this for the fact that it really kind of, I was like, wow, this is some good wrestling, and it got me excited to wrestle again. So it'll probably be a match I'll always remember for that fact that it kind of reawoke me. So I'll pick Mark versus Jay Briscoe from Ring of Honor's 500th episode that just aired.
Code of Honor adhered to. They've had their differences, but they are back in the tag team division in their history. Jay has the advantage. The older brother always seems to have the advantage. 4-1 in Ring of Honor rings.
Nobody in this company knows Jay Briscoe as well as Mark Briscoe, who's proven that he can beat him if given the right circumstances.
And look at that. And we've been on your Sid Clair affiliates for 500 episodes. Here's the 500 more as he shoots him off the rope, shoulder tackle, sending Mark Briscoe down. Nice drop down, almost catches Jay Briscoe. Around they go. Nobody home. Mark Briscoe follows him with a knee.
Yep.
Wow. Frankensteiner gets the kick out of the way. Back fist, back chop, misses.
You think these two know each other a little bit?
There is something about wrestling in these situations where it is either, if it's not on a sound stage in front of a screen of webcams, it's in a very echoey room. Have you had...
To be honest now, I actually think with the Ring of Honor wrestling that I have watched, I don't even feel like it's that much of a detriment to them. Mm. You know what I mean? Whereas it did feel weird with other promotions, but in a way I feel like Ring of Honor, because their stuff, what they have been showing, it's been based on the pure wrestling and the pure title and everything. That's been their main focus since the pandemic. And I actually kind of feel like the empty arena kind of complements it because it is such technical wrestling. It's grappling, it's this, that, and the other. So it's kind of even them kind of matches where crowds wouldn't even be too, they wouldn't be like, anyway. You know what I mean? So it's a kind of an era where you can really, really, really focus on the wrestling. So yeah, with Ring of Honor, I actually kind of find like it doesn't bother me that as much as like watching other wrestling had with no crowd. I actually kind of feel like it kind of works. Obviously, I can't wait till there's a crowd again, but I feel like they've actually just kind of made it work because it suits Ring of Honor style.
I think with, I have to excuse my cat's just turned up to say hello. So, he's come
hello.
To watch the interview, Pablo. Hello, Pablo. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, actually, because like the Briscoe EC3 match that we had from the anniversary show, Like, that was so gritty.
Yeah, it was amazing.
You didn't need kind of that pandering to the crowd and shots to the crowd, because you were just invested in the story, a very intimate story that they were telling.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they just kind of... Ring of Honor just has a way about it where it is, like, it is known as, like, it's like the best wrestling on the planet. It's not really... Mm. That's why I kind of figured, like, why do they want me? They're such a wrestling-based company. But they, I think they wanted to branch out into a bit more characters in this. Like, they have Danhausen now, who's probably one of the most over characters on the internet. Like, he's amazing. So it is great that they are starting to be like, okay, we're going to actually, like, you know, we want characters. We want a bit of like spice with this and everything. But what they're doing right now, I feel like these wrestlers are so, they're so, like, they were even saying last night, like, Jay Lethal's been wrestling like 20 years, like the Briscoe's there since the start. Like, they're so fine-tuned at what they're doing that, like, they don't even need the crowd anymore. They are so good at portraying the emotions within themselves, you know?
Mm. And they need you back there in 2021. That's what they
need. Yes, they will. I guarantee you, even if I have to swim, I am going to get it over and win that women's belt. Like, I feel like I did, like, I should get that belt just for my patience. Just, I've been sitting in my room for over a year now, looking at it online, watching everybody else going ahead and getting to wrestle again, like, whether it be like WWE, AEW, NXT UK, Ring of Honor, everybody else seems to have gotten back to wrestling, and I'm just here like, why not me? Why is Ireland the slowest with the restrictions? And like, this is just my luck. So I feel like after my virtuous patience, I should be rewarded by, you know, wrestling more than anybody else in the world.
I think you should. And where Hopefully. Can people go to watch this no doubt around the corner rise back to prominence?
Well, it'll be on Honor Club all over American TV. I don't know what channels myself because I'm not American. But yeah, and everything goes up on the Ring of Honor website. So obviously I will be tweeting like a maniac if I do get to return. So we'll look forward to it. So stay tuned.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.